If you love true crime and dark stories, then you'll love our other podcast, Dark Side of Wikipedia, with new episodes every Monday and Tuesday.
He told them that in the year prior to Bundy's move to Utah, she had discovered objects that she couldn't understand in her house and in Bundy's apartment. These items included crutches and a meat cleaver that was never used for cooking.
Just search Dark Side of Wikipedia wherever you download podcasts.
You know, then this guy gets rich and he has some issues with sexual addiction.
Yeah, and control.
Yeah.
The Keith Raniere story.
Dark Side of Wikipedia. Press subscribe wherever you download podcasts and don't miss a single episode.
In some ways, it starts to make things like Jeffrey Dahmer and that look tame, not in terms of the brutality of what they performed, but in terms of the psychology and manipulation of people.
Dark Side of Wikipedia. Available wherever you download podcasts. Today on Real Ghost Stories Online, many towns have legends about an infamous and haunted bridge. But are there the only legends? Could there be more haunting reality attached to these stories? That's what we talk about today on Real Ghost Stories Online.
Welcome to Real Ghost Stories Online. Call in your real ghost story now at 855-853-4802. Or write in at realghoststoriesonline.com. You're about to enter the world of the unknown, and quite possibly, the undead. This is Real Ghost Stories Online.
That it is. 855-853-4802 is our phone number at Real Ghost Stories Online. You can write in at realghoststoriesonline.com. And if you like the program, well, hey, become an extra podcast person. Sign up for that. Ghostpodcast.com is where you do that. Or patreon.com/realghoststories. When you are an EPP, here's what you get. Quite literally, the world's largest audio archive of ghost stories ever created. 8 years of ghost story content, more than anything ever done. You get all of that, all those shows. Plus, you get a bonus episode every single week filled with our best ghost stories for our EPP bonus members. The ebook, audiobook, you get all of it, $5 a month, ghostpodcast.com or patreon.com/realghoststories. Well, it's kind of a special day at Real Ghost Stories Online because introducing to you today a new co-host to the show. Carol is still on, Harper is still on, but we're adding another person to our mix. And the funny thing is, this is the very person who joining us, who this show would not exist had this person not done what he did 25 years ago and said, yeah, kid, come on over here. I'll teach you how to be on the radio. Todd Michaels is our new co-host, and this, I've talked about you on the air forever. I think you've even called in a few times, but here he is. He knows his ghost stuff, and welcome to the show.
The thing is, the way you tell that story is a little creepy. I sound like a creeper. Hey, boy, come on over here.
Well, you know? We actually
wasn't like that.
We had an employee like that at that station that...
That's right. What's really funny is 25 years, and we've known each other that long, I guess.
Yeah.
I think this is the first time, other than doing like wedding DJing and stuff like that, we've actually worked together, isn't it?
It, as far as being on the air, yeah. I mean, I would show up on your afternoon show when I would get off the bus and you would ask me some questions about my day or something. I didn't know what to say. I was like 14 years old. But yeah, I think this is the first time we've actually done a show together as like co-hosts, which is kind of crazy.
And I'll say this, I'm actually honored that you, you asked, because I've been a fan. I think you're really talented, but I've really been a fan of the podcast for a long time. So the fact that I'm having a chance to be involved in any way, shape or form is really cool. So thank you.
Well, I am honored that you are here. You know, I know I say it a lot, but I mean, hell, I mean, had you not, you know, done what you did for me back then and got me into this and, you know, didn't get the hell out of the studio, I don't think any of this would be going on. So I owe a debt of gratitude forever to you. But welcome to the show. You can, if you've watched A Haunted State at all on Amazon, right? Amazon Prime, or is that where?
Yep.
Yeah.
That's right.
right. And we've had Michael, right, on the show?
Michael Brown.
Yeah, Michael Brown on the show a few times, and you've even been on to talk about it, too. You can see some of Todd's paranormal investigation work on there, Haunted State. Look it up on Amazon Prime. It's a great series, and the documentary as well. Let's jump to our first story of the day. 855-853-4802 is the number. First starts out, says, hey guys, this says the above is a link to a summary of the legend I grew up with. So there's a legend here about a bridge. It says, I'm from a small farming community in Ringtown, Pennsylvania. It's nestled right in the middle of the coal region. And as coincidence would have it, about 7 miles from Centralia, Pennsylvania, the underground mine fire disaster. But as far as the Ringtown, which is concerned, I grew up hearing several stories about it, not really knowing what happened. As I became old enough to drive, it was a sort of a rite of passage for young adolescents to drive to the road where the witch's house was. And on that road, there's a bridge known by the locals as the Witch's Bridge. The idea was going out there at night, you'd sit on the bridge, turn the engine off, listen to the creek water running, and you're supposed to hear the witch or experience other unusual noises and or sightings. Some say your car will not start after shutting it off on the bridge itself, although that was never my experience. Most of what my generation heard about the bridge was passed down and likely added to and made up over time, and almost all legends are over time. With that said, the first time my friends and I went out there to the bridge, we were not expecting much. There were four of us, my friend Gary, himself, and two girls we were dating. Gary and I decided to push the envelope upon parking on the car on the bridge. Keep in mind, we were 17 and desperately trying to impress these girls we were with, so he and I got out of the vehicle and told the dates to drive away about 2 miles to the end of the road, turn around and come back for us so we can see if anything happens to us while they're gone. This plan served multiple purposes. First, as kids that we were, it made Gary and me look fearless and brave, so maybe these girls would like us more. So silly, but we were teenagers. The second, we planned to reposition ourselves about 50 yards away from the bridge towards the girls where they had gone and turn around and come back for us. The plan was as the girls came back down the road to pick us up, we would touch the back of the car as they slowed towards the bridge and scare them. And after revealing it was just us and this place was not really haunted, we'd leave. That was the plan. What happened was quite different. As we go into the position on the side of the road, crouching down to give context, this is a very narrow, winding road with trees and brush covering both sides. We heard the girl's car about half a mile away heading back towards us. As we waited, we heard the car slam on the brakes and a quick beep of the horn, followed by the engine accelerating and the girls coming down the road so fast we couldn't even stand up, we'd be hit by them. And they slammed on the brakes on the bridge itself for a second and then quickly take off and leave completely. So Gary and I are completely stranded now here in the middle of the night at the Freak Witch's Bridge. So after we realized they were not coming back, we decided to walk. Also, this was in 2004. Only one of us had a cell phone, and it was not either Gary or me. As we started walking home, we heard rocks being thrown in the creek, twigs snapping. Was it a prank now on us? Did they have a plan to scare us that completely undermines our plan to scare them? We did not know what to think, but we heard all kinds of noises and even saw strange lights in the woods as we made a 6-mile trek back to my house. When we finally got there, it's about 6 a.m. and the sun was coming up. We both crashed out of exhaustion. The next day, we found out what happened. So when the girls dropped us off and drove up the road and turned around, they said that as they came back towards the bridge, they saw a figure standing in front of the car and it disappeared, followed by something slapping on the side of the car twice, once on each side. They freaked out and took off back towards the bridge. And when they got there, they did not see us. So they thought we took off or something happened to us, which explained what we saw on our end. It was not us that they saw, but it almost seemed like whatever it was, it mimicked our intention. We were not mad at the girls for leaving us after hearing this. They thought we pranked them. We thought we got pranked. It was a crazy night. Whatever jumped in front of the car is a mystery to this day. They describe it as a hollow outline of a human figure, but it appeared and disappeared so quickly it left them doubting whether it was there at all, followed by the slapping of the vehicle. That's my story. I hope you enjoyed it. I'm a big fan. I listen at work every day. I also have a lot of Centralia stories on account of growing up so close. We urban explore that area my whole life. Thanks again. Urban legends like that, every area has them, but very rarely do I think things actually happen at them.
Well, I think that sometimes I wonder if maybe, as was mentioned in the story, things obviously grow and get bigger and the stories become larger than they actually were. But the story has to start someplace. And sometimes I wonder if we don't give these stories enough credit, mm-hmm. because I think sometimes little things do happen. And a lot of times, you know, as you're growing up, your parents, other people tell you, you know, there's nothing like ghosts. There's no witches. There's no spooks. There's no energies, all that kind of stuff. Mm-hmm. So when things happen, you kind of blow it off. Mm-hmm. Okay. If that story weren't, if there wasn't a witch's bridge and there weren't stories around it, and those two guys were just walking down the road and heard, you know, rocks in the water and tree snapping and stuff like that, they probably would have blown it off and thought about, just probably animals playing around or something like that. But because there was some lore there, there was some tradition, you know, they took it a different way. Sometimes I wonder if there isn't stuff there and a lot of people just kind of blow it off because we're taught not to think that way.
Yeah, that there's an impossibility that there isn't. You got to think that these stories originate somewhere, and that's where I'm always trying to dig to. I mean, it's nearly impossible to figure that out in many cases, but where did it start? Why did it start? Was there something where it began and maybe it was explainable, maybe it was not? But to your point, like, maybe there is something to these and maybe it does appear here and there, and that's how these legends continue to be fueled. Maybe it's not just everybody likes the ghost story. You almost think that at some point something needs a little bit more fuel to keep going. So what is fueling that?
Right. And the other thing that I'll throw in here, having done investigating and things like that, what we're kind of learning more about is the fact that humans can actually create energies themselves. Mm-hmm. So these guys had a plan. This is what they were going to do. And it ended up happening not by them, but by some other force, some other energy. So maybe it was their thought process that put this whole thing into motion. I don't know, but that's a great story. And I'll tell you what, I don't care what they say. I would have been ticked off at the girls and there'd never been another date after that.
I think it's over.
6 miles back to town? Come on.
In the middle of the night. Yeah. That would not be fun. Now, that's interesting what you're talking about with the humans and their own energy, because that's been something I've been talking about quite a bit with guests over on the Grave Talks lately, is this idea of the living haunting the living. Where we're always attributing it to the dead or an evil entity or an angelic thing or whatever. But we never really look at ourselves and go, is my energy causing this? I mean, we've talked about things where, you know, poltergeist and sometimes that gets heightened at puberty and stuff with kids and all that. But I suspect, you know, it happens. Energy does stuff at very heightened times of trauma in someone's life, at very stressful points in one's life, things just kind of can go a little wacky. And I've heard people tell me these stories for years, but quite honestly, I'm speaking from my own experience right now. In recent months, we've been going through a lot of stuff here, me and Harp, and I, for the life of me, could not, and my house is new. It's like three, four years old. Yeah. But with all the heightened anxiety and all of that that we're dealing with and trying to work through, at certain points, there's certain days, you know, that are good and certain days that are not. And on the days where they're not, I had this bedroom light that would turn on by itself, the fan light, and it would just go on. Now, it is operated by a remote control. So could it be an RF signal that's switching it? Sure, but I'm not around the house. I wasn't actively switching anything else on and off to see that happen. It just would just kind of do it. I'd be laying there in bed and all of a sudden, boom, the light goes on. And I was like, this is just weird. So I replaced the light yesterday. But there's another remote that goes with this one. So we'll see if it still does it. But I've seen that. I've had a couple other things around the house where it's like, well, that could be explained by some sort of signal triggering this or that. But these things have never done this before. So it's just a little bit odd.
You're like me in that you always try to come up with another explanation to make it not be what it could be.
Yeah.
I mean, and one of the things I really, you know, I really have thought about lately is I really thought about energies and stuff like that. And as humans, like you said, are the humans creating energies haunting humans? Mm-hmm. And I always think of like a match. You take a match, you strike it, you got fire. Mm-hmm. All it takes is for that fire to hit something flammable and it completely changes and creates a bigger situation.
Yeah.
And that's how I think, like, maybe there's a little something there. Maybe there's a certain energy on that bridge. Maybe some of the stories are true. But the humans that experience stuff, how much of their own energy created that particular event?
Yeah, it's like you got the right ingredient in the recipe. And because of that, yep. you know, or more like almost a science experiment, you put this, you know, chemical into this and boom, it goes. And
right.
maybe the other ingredient, the other person isn't the flammable one. And so they don't have that same experience that person B would have. It's right, interesting. Right. It's very interesting. And I think we're going to find more and more things about that. I could go on and on about that topic forever, but it's plenty of time too. Let's go to another letter. It says, "Hi, my name is Holly from the Niagara region in Ontario, Canada. I wrote previously to tell you about the house I lived in as a child. I'd seen a white hand coming out of my closet. Carol was concerned that I got validation from my mother later in life. I really did. Once I was older, my mother talked freely to me, not only about that house, but also about other ghosts that she had experienced. For example, there was this time she was napping while babysitting and was woken by a kiss, but no one was there. She also lived in a house with her cousins when she was small, where a woman would walk through the living room when they watched television. They were so used to that ghost that they just ignored her. She might have been more forthcoming because of our situation at the time. We were living in a 100-year-old house in Ontario, which is not far from the site of the Battle of Beaver Dams from the War of 1812. It's not surprising that it was haunted. It had old shutters on the inside of the windows. We'd leave them open and they would be closed when we came home. Woke up one morning to a couple of inches above my head. I immediately fell to the bed and opened my eyes, but I was comforted to know that my mom acknowledged that things were happening. Nothing else really happened at the house. It was odd or paranormal, except that we had violent squirrels that would pelt us with nuts if we tried to use the front door. I inherited my relationship from the supernatural both sides of my family. My dad taught us to avoid Ouija boards from time to time. We could read because in his family, a house had caught fire when a family member had used it. They started a game. The board spelled out something that my dad would not tell me. The lights went out. They smelled and saw smoke. The fire department could not explain why the fire started, as it did not make sense. Similar incidents have occurred with our family members, but no one will talk about these. The only reason I have so much detail, as little as there is, about the one incident is that I am a very persistent person. With that example in front of us, my siblings and I have all avoided Ouija boards all our lives. Thank you for all you do. I am undiagnosed, but based on things that I've learned about having two kids with autism, I'm sure I have what they used to diagnose as Asperger's. I'm extremely interested in ghosts and other supernatural situations, but I usually do not talk about it because I get too involved for most people. This means your podcast helps me feel part of a group on more than one level. I'll write again to tell you about our current house and the experiences we have here. This includes some incidents that show my kids are also possibly sensitive. Until then, I wish you well. Thanks for reading my story." Creepy house, creepy things, and Ouija board setting fire. Thoughts?
Well, those are things that I will not, and we've all played with a Ouija board. You have, right?
I tried it once, and it didn't do anything.
Well, mine was a Parker Brothers one. I'm yeah. not sure that was going to do much. But a lot of people have, and I think that as a game, it seems fun. But when you're using your body to be the open line of communication with something else that you don't know what you're communicating with, I mm-hmm. think that's a real concern. I think what's really cool is that she had the experience of having parents that were open to this and willing to talk about it, instead of like my parents, who if I said something was going on, they would have shot it down right away. So it's interesting that she grew up in a much different lifestyle growing up, where it was kind of open to talk about. And I also think it's interesting that she brought up the connection between autism and being more sensitive. I think I've always thought there's a link there.
I think there is. You know, Aspies tend to be a bit more sensitive. I'm a self-diagnosed one, but I have my therapists are just not, they can't technically diagnose, but they agree. So I think that explains a lot of my craziness over the years. And I'm saying it with love because I can obsess on things like only an Aspie can. But it is true. I think that sometimes you can get more focused on things and then they can be more apparent to you. When you have something on the spectrum, and it all depends on where you're at. But I think that's very true. The Ouija board, here's a question for you about Ouija boards and kind of the energy thing. Because you have a lot more experience than I do in terms of using, ghost hunting equipment and different sorts of things to see if anything's out there. I've always been curious about what is the difference between using a Ouija board versus using some of the equipment that's out there. And I think you may have answered it where you had said using your body as the conduit.
Right.
I never really considered it that way, but that's true.
You're asking that entity or that energy to use you as a source of communication. Mm-hmm. And that's to me, that's where it gets scary. And I'll be honest with you. I've been in situations investigating where we thought we did everything right. We thought that we investigated, we got evidence and thought we walked out of there saying our blessing to leave everything behind and have something still come home with me. So I think whenever you talk about the energies, whatever's on the other side, what you're dealing with, there's always that possibility that there's going to be an experience that you don't want to have. And it's just, and Ouija boards just tend to lend themselves to bad things.
Like you can do all the precautions that you want and all of the things, but sometimes things will just still slip through. There's no real foolproof way of stopping that. Is that what you're saying?
Absolutely. And okay. You really don't know who you're communicating with. Mm-hmm. I mean, it's like, if I hear your voice, I know that it's Tony, but could it be somebody else? Mm-hmm. And so when you're communicating and you're using all these forms of communication from paranormal investigative equipment to Ouija boards and stuff like that, it can say it's Sam talking to you from the other side, but is it really Sam? And is it really something you want to be messing with?
Sure. And there's never really a way to know 100% either. You're kind of taking a shot in the dark. You know, I'm not, pardon the pun, to try and figure that out. Okay.
Well, yeah.
You got to share what happened. Now you hinted at you were at an investigation. Something followed you.
Oh, God. Well, I'll be very vague because I don't know if I have rights to the information on this, but we investigated a location, and if folks want to get more information about this one, it was actually a location that's part of the Haunted State series, but we were at an investigation, and it was part of Washington Island in Wisconsin, which is, it's an island on the tip of Door County, beautiful location, very secluded. You got to take a ferry to get there. And when we left that location, I will say this, when I got to that location, I felt different. And again, like you, all sorts of reasons going through it. Well, you know, we're off of mainland. I've never been here. It's like a totally different world there.
Yeah.
But I was feeling kind of depressed while we were there. And when we came back, it was as if you've seen movies where there's everything's in color and then all of a sudden the color gets very dulled.
Yeah.
And the blues aren't as blue and the oranges aren't as orange. That's what happened to me when I left. And I dealt with that for like, I would say almost 2 months.
Oh my God.
To the point, I'll be open and honest that I had thought about possibly taking my life.
Oh my gosh.
And when the group got back together to do some more filming, I finally said, you know, I got to be open and honest about this with you guys. And I told my story. And every member of the group had a similar story after leaving that location. So I don't know if it was a situation from the location that we investigated, something followed back, or if it was just the energy from the land there. You know, I think land, homes, businesses, everything holds energy. Something may have followed us back.
So would you say it was something that like attached to you? Anything that you could say was conscious or more just kind of like a, like bad glue, you know,
it really was like, it reminded me of like the cloak, the cloak of invisibility or whatever the heck it is from Harry Potter. I felt like I was constantly, like there was a dark cloud over me all the time.
Yeah.
There was no communication, you know, things weren't moving in my house or anything like that.
Yeah.
There was this change in personality and this change in, my overall feeling that I felt.
Wow. How did it lift at a sudden lift? Did it slowly lift?
Well, I actually reached out to a friend who is Wiccan and had some did some spells and stuff like that to help me through that process. And that did help.
Really?
But I'm very conscious of it now. It's definitely a concern of mine. And I definitely go into investigations now more prepared for what I could walk away with.
Yeah. That's scary because a lot of, you know, people will go into it and I know you guys do your things, but again, it's like how, you got to be as prepared as you can. And so many people just jump into the world of ghost hunting, you know, with the iPhone and whatever device they picked up and, you know, hey, come on out. And they, you know, taunt and do all these horrible things that it's like, it just feels like you're really kind of asking for something not so good to be, to follow you home. But even if you're not even trying that, you're following all the best practices, you know, quote unquote, things can still happen. And that's,
and it may not even be a bad entity. It could have been a situation where we were in a location that maybe had some energy that was down or, mm-hmm. or whatever. And we just, and it didn't necessarily attach to us, but if you're open to it, if you're an empath and you feel things and you know things, it's like being a sponge that sucks right in.
Yeah.
And all of a sudden you've got it. Now you've got to release it somehow.
Yeah. Wow. Well, thank you for sharing that. That's really interesting. It's going to be really interesting to have you on the show to give a lot of your insights on all this, because it's a whole new voice and a whole new set of stories. So I'm going to be asking you for a lot of stories.
Yeah, absolutely. I've got a ton.
Yeah, that's great. Let's go to another caller. 855-853-4802 is our number. Hi, you're on the air.
Hey, Tony, Carol, this, or even Harp, this is Eric from Central Illinois. This story is something that has kind of been ongoing in a new house that my fiance and I have moved into in April. Started out where I, when rocking the baby to sleep, I had a line of sight into the kitchen, and I would see out of the corner of my eye the microwave and the oven time kind of get blocked out. And I thought maybe it was just my eyes playing tricks on me, so that's totally plausible. Then there was an instance where I was in the basement, and I heard my fiance call for me. So I went upstairs fully expecting to see her, as thought it was kind of odd as she had left. She wasn't there. So then I thought maybe I was just hearing things. Then one night, the toddler had woken up. So I was on the floor sleeping next or laying next to the toddler until he got back to sleep. And I was facing the crib, and I heard footsteps coming through the kitchen, into the room and standing right next to me, on my backside. And I rolled over fully expecting to see the feet of my fiance standing there and seeing her, and nobody was there. Then about a month ago, I was in one of the spare bedrooms doing some work late at night, watching some TV, and I had the door not all the way closed, but it was closed enough to where there might have been like a centimeter gap. And I heard the toddler starting to wrestle around, so I figured he was going to be getting up. And the door to the bedroom swings open probably about 6 inches, eight inches. And I'm looking and I thought I saw somebody there. So I thought maybe it was my fiance, cause it was like totally dark in the room, just had the TV light and my laptop light. So I was kind of blinded by that, but it looked like somebody was there. And I just stood and looked at the door, and I had a cold brush of air, like the back door might've been open. So the next day I asked my fiance if she had taken the dog out. And she said yes. And I said, well, when did you do it? And she's like, well, it was after, the toddler had woken up, and, he hadn't woken up at that point. A couple weeks ago we were making Christmas cookies, and we heard it was like almost like a dog toy in the dog crate getting batted around, but the dog was not in that crate. He was in his nighttime crate. And she kind of looked at me. She's like, "Did you hear that?" And I'm like, "Yeah, it sounded like a dog toy, like getting batted." And about 10 seconds later, it happened again. And I went and stood by the dog crate and it didn't happen. So, some weird things are kind of going on. It's not an old home. It was built probably 20, 25 years ago. The people that we bought it from are still living. So I don't know if it's my fiance's mother who passed away last January. So we do have a lot of her stuff after she passed on. But I don't get the sense that it's anything evil. It's just something that I think that is letting us know that it's there. So thank you. Have a good one.
Thanks for sharing your story with us. How often do you think it is that homes that are not that old, that have ghosts and the owners are alive and people are, or the former owners are alive and people look at it going, "I'm trying to narrow this down. I'm not really figuring this out." But then they start looking at their relatives who have died, when in reality, there's probably quite a few pets who've come and gone through there over those 25 years.
Right. I think that we always forget about that.
Yeah.
Like it could be a pet. If he felt that he heard a human walking and he saw a human shadow, then that would kind of maybe rule that out.
Sure.
But absolutely. I mean, if we're energy and pets are energy, who knows what's hanging around there? That was it. First of all, that was a great story. Mm-hmm. If that was going on in my house, I'd be freaking out all the time.
Yeah.
Okay. But absolutely, pets. I like the fact that he brought up the mother-in-law, because the first thing I thought of was, did somebody in someone's family pass away recently?
Mm-hmm.
And I know that, you know, it was a year before or so that the mother had passed away. But, you know, what happens when you die? If your energy needs time to, I call it splattering, energy splatters. Okay.
Okay.
If it takes time, they might be off doing something else before they come back. Mm-hmm. You know, I don't understand that completely, but that's the first thing that came to mind, was maybe a family member who had passed away was just back hanging out with the baby, playing with the dog, being mm-hmm. with the family once again.
And when they do that, I think sometimes people will assume, oh, they're here, they're haunting, and they're going to be here now forever. Do you think that they can kind of just come and go too? Almost, you know, like a human would also kind of come and go on a visit?
Well, in that splattering of energy philosophy that I have, or theory,
yeah.
And I have necessarily nothing to back it up, but I think once we go, our energy could be everywhere and anywhere at the same time. I've had some experiences with my mom passing away where things happened with family members at the exact same time in different locations of the United States. Mm-hmm. And that just made me think, you know, I don't think that entity, if it is a relative, is there all the time.
Mm-hmm.
But I think that the energy is possibly there. And they'll come and go and visit like they always did and watch over you. So, I mean, that's the best case scenario. So far, there hasn't been anything that's been negative in that situation. It actually sounds like a lovely situation.
Yeah. It that's kind of something I've been wondering about too. I've never heard the term splattering. I like that. It makes sense. But it's one of those questions I've brought up to many investigators over the last couple of years of, can the same entity simultaneously haunt two different places at once as a conscious entity? It's one thing if it's like just a residual thing and it's not really, you know, consciously there. It's some sort of energy replay, like a television show is just going over and over. But can that still conscious entity, that individual who was a person, literally be in two different places at two different times doing two different things? Or how are they doing that? What is that? Is it just a concept that we just can't even really quite wrap our minds around to grasp how they're processing that? You know, you can get the details of it out, but processing that idea is very difficult.
Well, you know, they've said for a long time that time travel is possible. And I'm sitting here thinking, well, how is that even possible? But they say it is. I liken it to this. The sun is energy. Okay. Mm-hmm. If I walk outside right now, I see the sun, I feel the warmth. Mm-hmm. I see the light. You're in a different location. You see the sun, you feel the warmth, you see the light. I look at it as that. I look at it as that energy of that individual can be felt in multiple locations at the same time. It's just, again, a thought process I've had. Some things that have happened personally in my life have kind of driven me to think that.
Sure. But
yeah, I mean, there's so much we don't know, but if you don't have an open mind to it, we're never gonna have any more knowledge than we have right now.
No, and the thing is, with this topic, the more you dive into it, the deeper you go, the more questions you end up having.
Absolutely. It's
just kind of the nature of how it works. That is going to wrap up today's episode of Real Ghost Stories Online. A big thank you and welcome to Todd for joining the Real Ghost Stories Online family. He'll be with us once a week on the program, so enjoy that. Become an EPP, extra podcast person. Sign up at ghostpodcast.com or patreon.com/realghoststories. Support our show and keep us on the air. Until next time, for Todd, I'm Tony. Thanks for listening to Real Ghost Stories Online.